This past Sunday, Jean-Claude Duvalier, who's best known to his countrymen as Baby Doc, returned to Haiti, a country he ruled for 15 years. Joining us now to look back at the way Baby Doc and his father, Papa Doc Duvalier, ran the country is Amy Wilentz, a contributing editor for The Nation, the author of Rainy Season, Haiti, Then and Now, which is about the Duvaliers, and I'm very pleased to welcome her back to our show on the second of today's Backstory segments. Hello.
Hi.
Baby Doc took power after his father, Francois Papa Doc Duvalier, died. How did Papa Doc come to power?
Papa Doc came to power in an interesting way. He decided to run on a platform of what was called a negritude or noirisme in Haiti. And it was a black power platform, and he exploited color tensions in Haiti for his own political gain, which probably wasn't so good in the long run and certainly wasn't good for the lighter-skinned classes during his regime. He also was a simple country doctor, as he liked to say, and he had participated in the eradication of yaws in Haiti, which had been a huge problem. So he was somewhat popular in the countryside as well. And his election was rigged, as were all elections under the Duvaliers. You know, he brought in people from the countryside to vote en masse for him. He plied them with rum and money. You know, that's how elections were run then.
Well, you suggest that there is a that color plays a role in Haitian politics. The elite tend to be lighter skinned, but everybody is to some degree or another of African descent. No.
Well, almost everybody is of African descent. There's a sort of merchant trade class that came from Syria, Lebanon, I guess at the end of the 1800s and the beginning of the 1900s. So they're not so mixed in as the rest. But, yeah, everybody is of black ancestry in Haiti for the most part.
What, after he came to power, with the help of the military, right?
Yes.
Didn't he – what did he do with to his political opponents?
Oh, his was a very, very cruel and brutal rule. There was no justice. There was no justice system that meant anything. He chased down his opponents and had them killed. He imprisoned people. If you weren't there in the country and he disapproved of something you said, he just took your wife and your children and imprisoned them. He famously boarded up an opponent's house with his family still in it and burned it down. He would leave his opponent's, you know, mutilated bodies sitting in chairs on the corner near the airport for everybody to see for like 3 days while the flies settled. It was very gruesome and you know.
So this was all about sending messages to people.
He sent a lot of messages and people heard the messages. But still people went on opposing him, you know, and still people were killed.
He also
developed a secret police called the Tonton Macout, which he wielded throughout the country. And they were seen both as his personal, very loyal secret police and as a counterweight to the army, which was, even under Duvalier's rule, had some independence. It was its own institution, and there are very few institutions in Haiti of any validity. And so Duvalier often struck against the army, which was seen as a bastion of light-skinned rule.
What does Tonton Macout mean?
Tonton Macout, Tonton is a diminutive for uncle, like oncle in French. Tonton Macout, Macout means a bag. It's a straw bag that peasants wear, a long-hanging straw bag. You've seen them. And Tonton Macout is a figure in Haitian fairy tales, nursery tales. He comes in the middle of the night, and he puts bad children in a bag and takes them away.
Mm, that's sending
so
a message as well.
Name. Yeah, he's a villain.
My guest is Amy Wilentz, who's a contributor to The Nation, author of a number of books, including Rainy Season, Haiti, Then and Now. We're talking about the Duvaliers in Haiti as part of our Backstory series. When Baby Doc took over from his father in 1971, he was just 19 years old.
He was a kid.
He inherited the presidency?
He inherited a country, can you imagine?
Well, that's not all
that
different from what
his.
We see in North Korea and some other places.
Yeah. It's very, Egyptian, old-fashioned Egyptian to inherit the country. So he took this thing, Haiti, and he proceeded to do what Papa Doc had done with it, which was he did his worst. And he was different from Papa Doc. Papa Doc, for all one can say about his evil and the corruption, the incredible corruption that existed during his rule, he himself was not interested in personal corruption, in taking money for himself and living in big houses and having beautiful things. But Baby Doc was. Baby Doc was more the dauphin, you know, the spoiled playboy child, the prince. And he liked having money, and he took money himself. And his wife, whom he married not long before the end of his regime, she also liked money a lot.
And they're supposed to have put it in the Swiss bank account. Do we have any sense of how much money we're talking about?
I think right now there's from between 5 and 6 million in that account. It's been quoted to me as 5.7 million.
That's not that
which
much.
Which is kind of peanuts for a corrupt dictator, if I may say so.
Yeah.
Well, but it's something.
But and he's been denied access to much of it because the Haitian government claims that it was skimmed off of
Haitian
funds.
Yeah, it's definitely ill-gotten gains. There's nothing that Baby Doc had in Haiti that wasn't stolen from the Haitian people. Because he didn't work.
And I gather...
You know, he didn't have a job.
I gather Baby Doc's ex-wife is said to have taken some of that money when she divorced him.
Yeah, I think she got a half settlement, so she got a lot of the money of the Haitian people. But still, they had 5.7 in the Swiss bank account that the Swiss then froze. And one of the reasons people say that he has gone to Haiti right now, which has been more than inexplicable to most observers of Haiti, is that on February 1st, a law goes into effect that would allow countries more easily to take monies out of dictators' Swiss bank accounts, ill-gotten gains, and that he wants to prove to Swiss authorities that the Haitians do not consider him to be an illegitimate, skimming dictator, but rather that he's just a Haitian person. So if he can go into Haiti, not be arrested, and then leave Haiti, his lawyers believe he will have made that point and will be able to have access to those monies. The Swiss have been saying, no, we're not going to be fooled. So it remains to be seen what the plan is.
Well, he was arrested, but
arrested. No, he was not arrested.
Well, he was taken to the police station, wasn't he?
He was taken in with a police escort into the courthouse, and then he was released.
Now, I assumed that he went back partly because Haiti is in a state of crisis, and often former dictators say, well, you know, remember me? Things were stable when I was in charge.
Right. Well, that's what we were assuming before we began investigating this Swiss situation. And I think there's an element of that. He looked, he said, well, there's been an earthquake, so that puts everything into chaos. And there's a cholera epidemic. That sort of leads to political instability. And look, they ran an election. They couldn't even get a real winner out of this election. There's a vacuum of power. I'm coming back. That was what we all thought was his reasoning at the time. Although, to my mind, insane, since he was threatened with arrest in Haiti. So
Haiti,
I wouldn't have come back.
Haiti's a very poor country today. Was it as poor when Papa Doc came to power in 1950?
Well, I would say it was almost as poor, but it was different, definitely. It was different under Papa Doc. I wasn't there at that time. I would like to point out I am younger than that. But under Baby Doc, it was still... It functioned because everyone knew what was what, and that is one of the virtues of dictatorship, if you're looking for one. You know who's in power, you know who's dangerous, you know who to avoid, and so things can work a little more smoothly, maybe. It's like the old saw of the trains running on time. Now, of course, there weren't trains running on time, and anything that did run on time ran on time because it had paid protection monies to the government. But I think one other thing to remember is that 25 years ago when Baby Doc fell, so he ruled for 13 years before that, during that time, globalization had not done as much damage to the Haitian economy as it has now. So that in a way, you look back at Baby Doc's era and you say, wow, his economy was so much stronger than the one today, But in fact, it's not about what Baby Doc did for the country or his policies or anything good about him. It's simply that the Haitian economy hadn't been so disrupted by global markets and global penetration at the time.
What kind of relationship did the Duvaliers have with the United States over the many years that they ruled?
It was a bit roller coastery. Sometimes the U.S. would support them, and sometimes the U.S. would inflict embargoes on them. It depended how well-behaved they were being and how conforming to American desires for Haiti. But there was one, I believe, CIA underwritten rebellion against Papa Doc, which he promptly quashed. And in the end, with Baby Doc in 1986, the U.S. was certainly one of the entities that was trying to get him out of the country and begin some kind of democratic begin the democratic history of Haiti.
And that was during the Reagan administration.
I know, isn't that incredible?
Because in fact, in all the years before that, all somebody had to say was, "I'm an anti-communist," and I'm sure that the Duvalier said that more than once.
Right, Papa Doc did it often. But I think it was felt, too, that the tinderbox on which Baby Doc was sitting might turn that way, and we had to get rid of him in order to control the situation.
Now, René Préval said in 2007 that Duvalier could return to Haiti, but that he would face justice for the deaths and torture of political opponents and all the money he's alleged to have looted from the Treasury. But he hasn't, as you say, he hasn't been arrested.
He has not been arrested, no, but he might be arrested. And the thing I believe is very important now. I mean, in a way, it would be just great to get him out of there, because who wants him as a sideshow to the real issues, the very hard issues that Haiti faces right now? Yet there is an element of justice that must be, you know, gratified. And Préval has to have him arrested, and I don't know what's going on, why he hasn't been arrested. He must be arrested. You know, it is French law in Haiti, like in New Orleans. There's a Napoleonic Code. So when you bring him in, you tell him what the allegations are against him, and I'm not sure that properly you just throw him in the in the brink. I think that you have then 3 months for an investigation of his improprieties. But, you know, people know what his improprieties were, so it shouldn't be so hard to amass that dossier. I'd also like to add that in Haiti, usually, if you've done something wrong, say you're charged with being a thief, if you're not immediately killed by a crowd of your neighbors, you're thrown into the back of a pickup truck and taken to a very unsavory Haitian prison. That should have been what happened to Duvalier the other day, but it isn't.
I have one more question, very little time. Haiti seems to have had a very bad record of leaders, even former President Jean-Bertrand Aristide, who, when he was in hiding in the United States before he returned to power, talked to us on the show, and he said he'd learned from the mistakes he'd made during his first time in power, that he'd be, but of course he turned out to not be much better. Now he's saying, he's in exile in South Africa, he's saying he too wants to return to Haiti.
Well, he has to call them out on this. I mean, if Duvalier, who is actually a tyrant and a killer, can go back to Haiti, then Aristide, who is beloved by the people and a popular hero in Haiti anyway, maybe not in the U.S., he feels he should be allowed to go back too, and I think it's absolutely right of him to make that point, if even if he's not able to go back because he doesn't have proper papers. So, I mean, I'm not surprised by that, and it just makes you think, oh my God, if Duvalier causes this much confusion and unrest, imagine if Aristide had been in that position.
Amy Valencia is a contributor to The Nation, author of Rainy Season, Haiti, Then and Now. Thank you, Amy, so much for being on our show again, this time to talk about the Duvaliers in Haiti on our Backstory segment.
Thanks a lot, Lynn.